A few years ago, when our children were still children, we went to the Landmark Centre in Aviemore, which, if you've never been, is a sort of forest theme park, a bit like Go Ape, but not quite so outrageously expensive. And one of the things to do there was basically a telegraph pole with a small platform on the top. And what you had to do was that you would have a harness put on you with a rope on it, and you would climb up the pole using those, you know, on telegraph poles, they've got those sort of little step things that they put on for the engineers to go up. You climb up to the top, quite safe because of the harness, and the rope that was attached to you would go up and over a pulley at the top and back all the way down to the ground. And on the other end of the rope was a big sandbag, which was just slightly lighter than a person. I think they've still got the thing now. They've got a slightly fancier system, but when we went, it was basically that. And so the idea is that you would climb to the top of the pole, about 50 feet in the air. You'd stand on the wee platform, and then jump off. And as you went down, the sandbag would act as a counterweight and go up, luring you gently down to the ground, or at least reasonably gently. Easy. And so we stood for a while and watched people doing this. There were plenty of other people there to take the plunge first, although I think that's rather an unfortunate phrase. And I thought to myself, okay, this should be easy. They've got all the safety lines rigged up. There's someone at the top to make sure that you're okay. They've checked the weights and everything. Logically, this shouldn't be a problem. And so I went forward. I got my harness on. I had the rope clipped onto me. I started climbing up the pole. This was a doddle. I reached the top of the pole, stood on the wee platform, and the guy at the top said to me, okay, whenever you're ready, just step off. And so I looked down, waved at Lindsay and the kids, and I couldn't move. Intellectually, I knew this was a perfectly safe thing to do. But my legs literally refused to obey my instructions to step forward. There was something deeply instinctive going on in my body that would simply not trust the situation. Now, fortunately, the guy at the top was trained what to do when that happens. They've got a well-rehearsed procedure to follow. They just push you off. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. He said, he really didn't. He said, everyone feels like that. Just take a couple of breaths, tell your legs to trust your mind, and walk forward. And so I did. I actually had to force my legs to move. And of course, I floated gently downwards, just like everyone else had done. But the point of the story is the degree of trust that I had to exercise in order to make that leap into the air. Trust isn't just a mental exercise, although that's an important part of it. Very often, trust requires a practical response too. I'm going to read from the book of Daniel. This is a story that we've already seen acted out very briefly this morning. If you've got your Bible, do turn to it. And if you're trying to find Daniel, let me encourage you to use the contents page at the beginning of the Bible. Daniel is about two-thirds of the way through the Old Testament. After some quite long books by prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel, and then you get to Daniel. And we're in Daniel chapter 3. And the story behind this book is that the Jews have been defeated by the Babylonians. They've all been carted off as captives to Babylon under King Nebuchadnezzar, who is like one of the Bond villains of the Old Testament. He dreams of world domination, and actually he's doing a pretty good job of that so far. And just like a Bond villain, Nebuchadnezzar sometimes does some really crazy things just to demonstrate how powerful he is. Let me read the first part of the story. This is from Daniel 3, verse 1. King Nebuchadnezzar made a gold statue, 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide, and set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then he sent messages to the high officers, officials, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the provincial officials to come to the dedication of the statue he had set up. So all these officials came, and stood before the statue King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald shouted out, "People of all races and nations and languages, listen to the king's command. When you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and other musical instruments, bow down to the ground to worship King Nebuchadnezzar's gold statue. Anyone who refuses to obey will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." So at the sound of the musical instruments, all the people, whatever their race or language, bowed to the ground and worshipped the gold statue that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So let's be clear, this is completely ridiculous. If you wrote this into a film script, it would have to be some sort of dark comedy. Everybody is ordered to bow down to worship an idol at the sound of the orchestra, and if they don't, they'll be burned alive. And the way this is written, with all these repeated lists of people and instrument, and in fact my translation doesn't keep repeating the instruments ad infinitum, but in the original they really are there every time. And those repeated lists are designed to emphasize the sort of tongue-in-cheek humor. This is absurd. And the writer is trying to point out this is absurd. All of the wealthy, well-educated, respected leaders and officials are summoned to bow down and worship a thing, a 90-foot gold statue, in time to the music. But even if the king's command is ridiculous, the outcome is deadly serious. Everybody knows that Nebuchadnezzar isn't joking when he says that he will throw anyone who disobeys into a furnace. So when the music plays, everyone bows down. Well, nearly everyone. There are three people here who aren't going to play by Nebuchadnezzar's rules. And they're three Jews called Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who'd been given important jobs in the civil service. And so they were part of this group of high officers, officials, governors, advisors, treasurers, and all the rest of it that had to go into the desert to the dedication of the statue. Let's see what happens to them from verse 8. But some of the astrologers went to the king and informed on the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "Long live the king! You issued a decree requiring all the people to bow down and worship the gold statue when they hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harps, pipes, and other musical instruments. That decree also states that those who refuse to obey must be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, whom you've put in charge of the province of Babylon. They pay no attention to you, Your Majesty. They refuse to serve your gods and do not worship the gold statue you've set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar flew into a rage and ordered that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought before him. When they were brought in, Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you refuse to serve my gods or to worship the gold statue I've set up? I will give you one more chance to bow down and worship the statue I've made when you hear the sound of the musical instruments. But if you refuse, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace. And then, what god will be able to rescue you from my power?" So what are they going to do? It would be so easy, so sensible, in fact, for them to just stop what they were doing when the orchestra played, go along with the crowd and bow down, and in their hearts, honor God. Maybe there are times when we have done just that. Rather than take a stand for God and trust him whatever the outcome, we've taken the less risky, less outspoken way forward and kept our faith in God to ourselves and our mouths shut. Jesus once said, "You cannot hide your light under a bowl. It's all or nothing. No holding back when the spotlight is firmly on us. Perhaps especially when the God that we serve is being questioned." Look at Nebuchadnezzar's question in verse 15. "Then what God will be able to rescue you from my power?" It's a direct challenge to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. the God they've served all their lives, the God who they believed was the only living God, the God of the whole world. This is a challenge to him, so they know exactly what is at stake, their lives and God's honor. So for them, there is only one way forward. They couldn't claim that their God alone is sovereign and then bow down to worship an idol, no matter what the penalty might be. From verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to save us. He will rescue us from your power, your majesty. But even if he doesn't, we want to make it clear to you, your majesty, that we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue you have set up." Now, most of you know how this story ends. And if you don't, go and read it for yourself later because it's a great story. But I'm not going to read the end now because actually today, the end doesn't matter. The end isn't the point. The thing we need to see today is right here at this point where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are standing on the platform on the top of the telegraph pole, trying to work out what to do. They have great faith in God. Their faith tells them that God is able to save them from Nebuchadnezzar. In fact, their faith tells them that God will save them. But they have more than faith in God. They have trust in God. And their trust in God allows them to say, "You know what, Nebuchadnezzar? God can save us, and we hope he will. But even if God doesn't save us from you, he's still God. And we trust him to make the right decision." Read through your Bible or listen to stories of the church over the last 2,000 years. And there are times when miracles have taken place and thousands have come to faith and God has protected people in all sorts of fabulous ways. But there have been moments too when believers are persecuted or harassed or put to death in horrific ways. In our series on Acts, we've just seen Stephen being stoned to death because of his faith in Jesus. Does that mean he was wrong to trust in God? Absolutely not. Because God has all our futures in his hand. Not just what happens today, not just what happens to me and to you, not just what happens to us here during our lives on earth, but everything. Now, we can't go on long this morning because the children need to come back, but I want to quickly think about how this idea of trusting God, whatever the outcome, means to us today. And one thing in particular that comes to mind is how we deal with the fact that we had to leave our home in the Victoria Park Centre. Pointing there, where is it? I have no sense of direction. Wherever it is. Okay. We had to leave there and go on this nomadic journey around the town. It's been exhausting. It's been confusing. Frankly, for many of us, it's been discouraging. Instead of being flooded with new opportunities and new relationships, a lot of the time it's just felt like we're coming up against a series of closed doors. And I've heard you say that, and sometimes I've said it too. So do we have a faith in a God who is able to do more than all we ask or imagine? And are we going to put our trust in God, whatever he does? And if that trust requires a practical response, what will that trust look like as we begin to think about building? What will that trust look like as we face criticism in the press, as I'm sure we will? What will it look like when people ask us why we had to leave the Victoria Park Centre? What will it look like as we begin to think about fundraising or giving our own money or inviting the community to share our facilities with us? Now, these aren't simple questions. I'm not trying to get an easy right answer. These are big questions, and we're going to have to wrestle with them together. But whatever the right answer is, it has to begin with putting our trust in God. Because we trust in an awesome God. The same God as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.